Remind you that this is our last class for the year, and I want to wish everybody that you have a gesunte zinne, and we will be resuming again 2.5 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, the week of September 14th, Tuesday of that week, which is of course nearly the Ides of Elul. It's Yud Dalet Elul. And as usual, there will be announcements in the Jerusalem Post, so you don't have to worry about it, but keep that date in mind. And we're really ending a week before we normally end. Every year we would be ending already in the 9 days. What the next week is?
Monday
is Rosh Chodesh. Monday is Rosh Chodesh. But because of a family simcha that we have to prepare for, I have to start resting up, so we're making a wedding of a son in the United States, so we have to, rest up a little bit. Okay. Welcome my brother-in-law, fellow sitting back there, that's Mendel Rubinoff. He's my wife's brother. And he came here last week, this past Sunday, 2 days ago, was the first yard site for my mother-in-law, Alea Shalom, and we will dedicate this year to her memory. So Mendel is here. Okay. Megillat Eicha. Let's begin with a few general comments. There are five chapters in Eicha. Chapters 1, 2, 4, and 5 have 22 psukim each. Chapter 3 has 3 times 22 psukim. Again, Chapter 1 and 2, and 4, and 5 have 22 psukim each. Chapters 1, 2, and 4, each pasuk begins with a letter of the alphabet in order, nearly. I'll explain the nearly in a moment. Chapter 5 has 22 psukim, but does not follow the order of the alphabet. It's just 22 psukim. I see the looks of confusion on your faces, but fear not, you'll get it all straight. Chapter 3 has 3 times 22 psukim, because in chapter 3 we have the Aleph Beis 3 times. There are 22 letters in the Aleph Beis. The first 3 psukim begin with Aleph, the second 3 psukim begin with Beis, and so on until the end of the Aleph Beis. That means 4, 5, 6, 7 times 22 would be the number of psukim in all of Eicha. I'm not too good at arithmetic. I'm not even going to try. And I'll calculate it. You can all do it at home on your computers, and your high-speed computers obviously will give you the answer. I did make a comment when I said that they follow the Aleph Bet. I said, what word did I say? Nearly. Why did I say nearly? Because chapter one follows the Aleph Beis precisely. From Aleph straight through to Tav. In the second chapter, it follows the Aleph Bet except for 2 letters that are out of order. In chapter 2, Pasuk 16, Potsu alayich pihem kol oyevayich, and Pasuk 17, Osa Hashem asher zomam, over there the pay precedes the ayin. And that's what happens in all the other chapters where it follows the alphabet. The pay precedes the ayin. In the alphabet, ayin precedes pay. And the Gemara asks, Lama higdim pei la'ayin, why does the pay come before the ayin? Says the Gemara, Amar Rabba, Amar Rab Yochanan, Rabba said in the name of Rab Yochanan, Bishvil Miraglim, because of the spies, She'omru b'fihem, Mashalo ro'u b'einehem. They said with their mouths what they had not seen with their eyes. They put their pay before their ayin, or maybe better said, they put their care before their ayin. They said that which they didn't see. But you will tell me that they protested so much that they are giving a report of what they saw. So you know, of course, you see what you want to see. And because you see what you want to see, they saw the wrong thing, and therefore their mouths preceded their eyes. Interesting, the Baal Torah Tamima asks, well, why don't we have the pay before the ayin in the first chapter as well? Then he says one answer that doesn't excite me much. He says, you'll notice the change is more dramatic when in the first chapter it's the Aleph Beis in order, and then in the second chapter all of a sudden things are out of order, out of whack. You notice it more. I don't know, it's a little difficult. I think that if we found the Aleph Beis, anybody would have noticed even in the first chapter that the pay precedes the pay precedes the ayin. And I had wanted to say that there's another Gemara that says that why does Eicha follow the Alephbet? In order to tell us that Jews had neglected the Torah that was written with the 22 letters of the Alephbet. Torah, what makes up Torah? The letters of the Alephbet. So I have a feeling that maybe the first chapter was in order to tell us that everything follows in order of the alphabet, in order to demonstrate the idea that Jews simply had neglected to fulfill properly Torah that was written with the 22 letters of the alphabet. And then Eicha becomes more specific by pointing out that there was a particular sin, and that sin was the sin of the Meraglim, who put their peh before their ayin. I would say that that's a general introduction to the structure of Sefer Eicha. Who wrote Eicha? Eicha was written by Yirmiyahu Hanavi. And we will see there's going to be a discussion about when he wrote it. When was it written? Was it written before the Churban? Was it written after the Churban? Let's begin. Eicha Yoshua Vadod Ha'ir Rabati Am. How did it happen that Yoshua Vadod alone sits, the city that was once Rabati Am, a city that was once a metropolis of many people? Ha'ir Rabati Am, Haitaka Almana, was like a widow. Rabati Bagoyim, a city that was so important amongst the nations of the world. Sarati Bamedinot, a city that was princely amongst the... When you talked about Yerushalayim, a world took notice. Haitalamas, and the end is that the city is now under the weight of taxes of a foreign power. Yes, I saw the looks on some of your faces, and I think that it's very fascinating. We have to put ourselves in the position of Yirmiyahu, and not only the position of Yirmiyahu, but what was Yerushalayim for 1900 years? Yes, now somebody sneezes in Yerushalayim and CNN is going to report it throughout the world. A hint of the possibility, you know, a bulldozer or a tractor going through Harnof that may possibly be on its way to the old city becomes news worldwide. it's very important to be able to see the contrast. We have to see what Yirmiyahu, what he's describing, and we're going to see a number. I'm going to use a number of medrashim in order to explain to you Sefer Eicha. But here we're talking about Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu is talking about a people that a city that is alone, a city that's lonely. Once a great city, once a powerful city, once a city that made a difference to the whole world, and now it is ka'almana, like a widow. Rashi, of course, brings the Gemara that says, "V'lo almana mamish," she's not a real widow. Elo ki isha shaholach ba'lo lemedinat hayam v'dato lanzor etzla. It means that even in the first pasuk of Eicha, already the hint of consolation is already there. Yirmiyahu does not refer to the city as an almana, a widow, but ke almana. She's only like an almana. At present, she's alone. Now she's lonely, but it's more like a woman whose husband has gone on a trip, but is ultimately going to return to her. I'm going to read a number of the statements of our rabbis. First of all, there's the famous Maimon Chazal that says that there were three people who used the word Eicha. In Parshat Devarim, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu says, Eicha esol vadi, how can I carry alone torchachem umas'ech masachem v'divchem? Moshe says, how can I carry the burden of this great people? Then Yeshayahu says, Eicha hayta lezona kirya ne'emana. Now, the first Eicha, the Eicha of Moshe in Parshat Devarim, the Eicha of Yeshayahu is in the Haftorah for Parshat Devarim, which is the first chapter in Sefer Yeshayahu. Eicha hayta lezona kirya ne'emana. How does a city of faith, how has it become a harlot? In other words, there's the Isha image used again, but of course in an extremely negative way. And then the third one who said Eicha was Yirmiyahu. And the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu saw Klal Yisrael b'shalvatam while they were at peace. Yeshayahu saw Klal Yisrael b'pachazutam when there was a tremendous amount of activity. They were beginning to change from one kind of a people to another kind of people. And it's of course Yirmiyahu who sees them b'churbanam during the course of their destruction. In the Medrash on Sefer Eicha, there are a number of rabbis that are going to take a position that they're going to intensify pasuk by pasuk. One, I will show you in one moment. Reb Yitzchak Pasach. Reb Yitzchak, when he opened his comments on the book of Eicha, he said, Tachat ha-shalo avadetot Hashem alokecho b'simcha uv'tuv levav v'avadetot et oyevecho. Because you didn't serve God with joy and with a complete heart, then the end is that you're going to serve your enemies. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to the Jewish people, Ilu zachitem, would you have been worthy, then you would have been reading in the Torah, Eicha Esa Levadi. The only Eicha that you would have known is Moshe Rabbeinu saying, how can I carry this troublesome people alone? I'll explain in a moment. V'achshav shelo zechitem, now that you are unworthy, hareyatem kodim Eicha Yoshva Vodot, so what you read is, Eicha, how does she live alone? Let me explain what this means. When Moshe Rabbeinu says, how can I carry the burden of this people? Do you know what he's talking about? He's talking about a mighty people that grows larger from day to day. I'm not certain how many Jews there were at the end of the 40 years of the desert. There was probably a great deal more than the number that came into the desert. Moshe Rabbeinu has difficulty dealing with so many people. It's a growing nation, growing by leaps and bounds. That's the Eicha of Moshe. Therefore, how can Moshe Rabbeinu says, how can I carry alone the burden of this entire people? It's a great, big, mighty people growing bigger day by day. And what's Yirmiyahu talking about? Yirmiyahu is talking about completely the opposite. A city that's alone. A city that is emptied of its people. Not in a process of growth at all. On the contrary, we're talking about a process of deterioration. A process of a city once great, powerful, mighty, being emptied of its inhabitants. Then there's... There are a lot of fascinating notrikin in Eicha. I'll explain in a moment what that means. Darash Ben Azai said, Lo Golu Yisrael Acher Kafru B'Yechido Shel Olam, Israel went into exile when they rejected Yechido Shel Olam, the one God of the world. They went into exile because they rejected the mitzvah of Milah that was given at the end of 20 generations. There were 10 generations from Adam until Noah, 10 generations from Noah till Avram. 20 generations passed until God gave the mitzvah of Milah. Jews rejected the 10 commandments. They neglected the 5 books of Torah. The word Eicha, Aleph stands for one, God alone, a rejection of God. Yud stands for their rejection of the 10 commandments. Chaf represents the 20 generations until Brit Milah was given, which they rejected as well. And the Hay, of course, represents Chamisha Chomshei Torah. Chazal found a tremendous amount within the words of Eichon. I'll show you more. Another one of the Chachamim whom we are going to follow through the few psukim that we're going to learn this morning. Eichon Yoshua Badod Omar Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Nechemia is very fascinating. Rabbi Nechemia says the following. Afal pi shekilalon Yirmiyahu ba'alav bet. Even though Yirmiyahu cursed them with the letters of the alphabet, afilu hachi, despite that, higdim Yeshayahu v'rif'an lekulam. Yeshayahu already preceded Yirmiyahu with the refuah, the healing, for everything that would be said by Yirmiyahu. Remember, Yeshayahu in time precedes Yirmiyahu. Reb Nechemia is going to show that every negative statement that is made by Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu had already anticipated it, and the refuah was already prepared in advance. First example, Yirmiyahu says, Eicha Yoshva Vatad, how does she live alone? A Yerushalayim without its children. The Yeshayahu Amar, Yeshayahu had already said before, V'amarta bilvavcha, when you're going to take a look at the millions of people coming back to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to say in your heart, Mi yolad li adele? Who gave birth to all of these? Where did they come from? Look at them when they're coming. They're coming by boat, by land, by air. They're coming from all over. And you're going to be so amazed that you're going to say, Mi yolad li adele? What Reb Nechemia means is that Yeshayahu has already described intensely the kibbutz Goliath that is going to come ultimately afterwards. Which means that every step of what Yirmiyahu is saying has already been, in a sense, the refuah is already there. Which brings me to something that I just want to mention in passing, something that was the subject of a major shiur last year. And that was an approach that I took to the idea of a statement that the Gemara tells us, Ein Mugdam U'Me'uchar Batorah. The statement, Ein Mugdam U'Me'uchar Batorah, usually is understood as meaning that Torah does not follow chronological order. Torah does not follow chronological order, or doesn't necessarily have to follow chronological order. One of the classic examples of Torah not following chronological order is the Sefer of Bamidbar that we are going to be completing this week. Sefer Bamidbar begins in the second month of the second year in the desert. And three parashiyot later, in Parashat Bahalotcha, there is a flashback to the month before. First month in the second year, Jews are told to make a Korban Pesach in Nisan, when Bamidbar opens in Iyar. So the Gemara asks, why doesn't it follow in order? Says the Gemara, Zotavedet, this comes to tell us, Ein Mugdam U'Me'uchar BaTorah, there is no chronological order to Torah. And I remember I questioned, what is the meaning? What do you mean Torah doesn't follow chronological order? Of course Torah follows chronological order. Where does Torah start? Torah starts with creation. From creation it goes, yes, we talked about the 10 generations from Adam until Noah, the 10 generations from Noah until Avram, Avram, Yitzhak, Yangi, Mesha, Adam, Yitzhak, Dovah, Shlain. I mean, Torah follows straight in chronological order. What do you mean, Ein Mugdam U'Me'uchar BaTorah? What does the word mean? There is no order to Torah. So I said the following, and that's going to be pointed out as a theme by Reb Nechemia in this entire perek of Eicha. Ein Mugdam U'Me'uchar BaTorah, I explain, means the following. There are two patterns in history. There are two patterns in history. There's linear or chronologic. It's good, you don't have to understand a word I say yet. I just want you to be, not impressed. You should begin to wonder, what's the man talking about? All history is linear and chronologic, except for Jewish history. Linear history or chronological history means the following. We normally assume in the course of events in history that there's cause and effect. A leads to B. B leads to C. 1, 2, 3. Everything follows in order. Everything has its cause. Everything has its cause. I mean, if you took it, when we learned history in school, I remember, you have to know, what were the causes of the First World War? So anybody who was, of course, going to say the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand, where was it, in Sarajevo? Of course, was making a mistake. In other words, that was the match. But there was for years, all of the struggles going on between Germany and France. But everything follows. It means that everything follows in order. There are causes that bring to effect. That's true of all except for Jewish history. This was, I said, the subject of a shiur a year ago. Jewish history is different. Jewish history does not follow the pattern of cause and effect. Because would Jewish history follow the pattern of cause and effect, we should have disappeared a few thousand years ago. Just as all of the major civilizations, 21 at least in number, that came into being on the face of this earth and then disappeared. But Jewish history is different because Jewish history does not follow Mugdam and Me'uchar. Mugdam means the former and Me'uchar is the latter. The history of the world follows the pattern of Mugdam and Me'uchar, cause and effect. The former and the latter. The former leads to the latter. The former brings about the latter. One brings to two and to three. And therefore, ultimately, if one leads to two and to three, cause and effect ultimately can bring a civilization to its ultimate collapse. It deteriorates, It begins to disappear until finally it's gone from the face of this earth. But not so Jewish history. Because in Jewish history doesn't follow the pattern of cause and effect. Jewish history is divine history. Jews, Torah, and God are inextricably intertwined, so just as God and Torah are eternal, we are eternal. And therefore, when the Nevi'im tell us what's going to happen in years to come, it means everything has already, in that sense, been divinely ordained in advance. Jews will go into Gullus, and ultimately Jews are going to return from Gullus. Jews may be in exile for 2,000 years, and they're going to return, and they're going to establish themselves in their own country, something never, ever achieved by any other people on the face of this earth. So why didn't we disappear? Because our history is different. Our history does not follow cause and effect. When Yirmiyahu is talking and about Churban and describing Churban, Churban, destruction and suffering by Klal Yisrael, is always a temporary state. You know what it always is? It's Churban. It's like a Churban. It's like destruction, but it's never destruction mamish. It's almana, like an almana, but never almana mamish. Because Jewish history has already been preordained and predestined by a Rebbeinu Shel Olam who has entered into an eternal relationship with the Jewish people, that even though there be Churban, there is always going to be renewal. And Rabbi Nechemia is going to demonstrate this in every pasuk in this chapter of Eicha. Rabbi Nechemia, in a sense, is saying, It's terrible, but don't get shook up. Because before Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu had already told us what was going to happen after Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu does not describe an ultimate state of affairs. Yirmiyahu describes the state of affairs that he sees before his very eyes. Doesn't mean that that's going to be the state of the Jewish people. The state of the Jewish people has already been described by Yeshayahu. And therefore, though Yirmiyahu says, O Yerushalayim is alone, but Yeshayahu already preceded him. There is no order to Jewish history. It doesn't follow the normal order of events, cause and effect. Yeshayahu had already seen in his mind's eye. Isn't that interesting? The Meraglim, the pay, the mouth, came before the ayin, before what they saw. But by Yeshayahu, his eyes saw, and then his mouth spoke. It means that Yeshayahu had a vision and he described the vision. Would the Meraglim have been people of vision, where you see first and you speak second? Only then they would have succeeded. But no. Do you know how the Meraglim looked at everything? The Meraglim looked at Jewish history as normal history. And in the normal course of events, they're going to crush us. We don't stand a chance. But with a little bit of a leap of faith, a little bit of vision, they should have been able to see that Jewish history follows a completely different pattern. The pattern has already been determined and preordained by God himself. And that's what Rabbi Nechemia is going to point out. Yirmiyahu says, Eicha Yoshua Vadad, how is the city alone, no people, empty, klein shtetl, a city that was once Chabatia? Says Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu has already said that we're going to turn around one day and we're going to say, "Mi yolad li et Ela? Who gave birth to all of these? Where did they come from?" And we, of course, have the unique zchut to be living at a moment in history when we're able to confirm. We are the confirmation. We're the living. We're here because of Yeshayahu. How do you like? Did it ever occur to you? That some of you think you're here because of the Jewish agency, children, Einiklach, I don't know, Herzl. What are you talking about? You're all here because of Yeshayahu.
Because Yeshayahu clearly said the words of the Rebbeinu that we're going to turn around one day and say, Miyaladli et Ela. And the fact is that you don't need two, if I need, it's already 3,000 years since Yeshayahu at least, but you don't need 3,000 years. How many times I told you I learned here in Yeshiva in Yerushalayim in 1955-56? Do you know what a little town this was? This was a klein shtetl. You could walk the whole city most probably in 25 minutes. What? Back what a little town this was. What are you talking about? Would anybody have said about this? Rabati Bagoyim, Sarati Bamedino? What are you talking about? It was a little shtetl with a terrible wall going through the middle of the city, a few blocks of it. And here we are the living evidence of the truth of what Yeshayahu said. All right. Rabati Bakayim Sarati Bamedinot Haita Lamas says, so here's something, a very important idea, and I think I became a little thrilled myself because I figured out something here that I see afterwards the Baal Torah Tamina says, and I felt good, you know, I wanted to pat myself on the back. There's Reb Yehuda Omer, there's a machloket between Reb Yehuda and Reb Nechemya. This is, remember, Reb Nechemya is the one who in every one of the tragic psukim over here sees the silver lining. In every Yirmiyahu pasuk, he sees the backdrop of Yeshayahu. Reb Nechemya is the great optimist. I would say that Nechemya is like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, even at the moment of great tragedy, was able to see the famous story of Rabbi Akiva and the Chachmei Yisrael who are walking up to from Har HaTzofim. They're walking up to Har HaBayit and they see a fox coming out of the Beit Kodshei HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. And they begin to, the rabbis begin to cry, and Rabbi Akiva begins to, the word is, schok, I don't, doesn't mean laugh, I think he's smiling. So they ask him, why are you smiling? So he says, and why are you crying? So they say, of course we have to cry. Here is the Holy of Holies that only the Kohen Gadol went in on one day a year on Yom Kippur, and here foxes are going through it. So he says, that's precisely the reason why I am smiling. Because if the prophecies of Churban, the prophecies of destruction, had been fulfilled so precisely, now I know that all of the prophecies of consolation are going to be fulfilled precisely. There's a machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Nechemya. What does the word Eicha mean? Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Rabbi Yehuda says, Ein Eicha elo lashon tochacha. Eicha means tochacha. The word Eicha has in it the word Tokacha. Tokacha means to admonish, to criticize, to attempt to correct. Kamoshe Nemar, as does a pasuk, he brings a pasuk in Yirmiyahu where the word Eicha is used. Eicha tomru chachomim anachnu. How can you say that you're wise people when you make all of these terrible mistakes? Eicha he sees as a book of admonition. For Reb Nechemya Omer, Reb Nechemya says, Ein Eicha el lishon kina. Eicha is a word that means to lament. Nebuch Eicha, how did it happen? How did it happen? Ribbono shel Olam, how did you do it? Kamo shenemar, as it says, Vayikra Hashem Elokim el ha'adam, after man had sinned, first man had eaten from the tree of knowledge. So it says, Vayomalo, he said to him, Ayeka, Ayeka, the letters Eicha, where are you? And Rav Nechemya says that God turned to him and said, Oy lecha, woe unto you. I want you to understand that Rav Yehuda and Rav Nechemya are taking two completely different approaches to the word Eicha. One is, Rav Yehuda, Eicha, how did you do it? to admonish, to instruct. And Reb Nechemya sees it as a cry of pain. Nebuch, Nebuch. I mean, these are two different worlds. And I'll tell you right away why this was important to me, because I found another machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. Eicha yoshva vadod, listen to this. Rabbi Yehuda omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, b'yemei Yehoyakim nemro migilat kinot. Amalei Rabbi Nechemya, v'chibochin al hameit ad shelo yamut. Rabbi Yehuda says that Megillat Eicha was written in the days of Yehoyakim. Yehoyakim was a king of Yehuda before the Churban. So Reb Nechemya turns him, remember our Reb Nechemya. Reb Nechemya turns him and he says, do you cry for the dead before they're dead? V'chibochin al hameit ad shelo yamut. Do you cry for the dead before they're dead? Ella, Reb Nechemya says, achar ha-Churban nemra. It was said after the Churban. And proof of it is Eicha Yoshva Vadod. Yoshva is already past tense. That means we're talking about a city that is already alone and lonely. I'll tell you what's so terribly important about this second machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. Remember again, the first machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya was, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Eicha means to admonish. And according to Rabbi Nechemya, Eicha means to bemoan. And I was wondering to myself, if the Churban, you admonish? What would admonishing mean? That Yirmiyahu, who for 40 years had walked the streets of Yerushalayim and told Jews that if you don't repent, there's going to be a Churban. You know what that would mean? That when the Churban finally comes, Yirmiyahu should be walking through the rubble, the ruin, the destruction, and say, listen, fellas, I told you so. For 40 years I told you so, and you didn't listen to me. That's Tokacha. Reb Nechemya is saying that the same Yirmiyahu, who, by the way, when one studies Sefer Yirmiyahu, you will find out that Yirmiyahu was thrown into jail, Yirmiyahu was tortured, there were attempts on his life, he was hated and hunted, he was beaten, and he was the one who prophesied the Churban, and what he wanted more than anything else is that they should prove him wrong. And you know what happens once the Churban comes? God forbid that Yirmiyahu should be walking the streets of Yerushalayim saying, I told you so. You know what Yirmiyahu is doing after the Churban? He laments, Oy vei chirbeni shalelu. How did you do it? How can you do that to your people, to your city, to your country, to your base? How can you do it, chirbeni shalelu? How did you do it? I'll tell you why this is important to me. I'm not terribly thrilled with the soothsayers in our community who, after a tragedy, know precisely which avarim caused the tragedy. And therefore, following some tragedy, oh, that's because of Chilul Shabbos. Oh, that's because they checked the mezuzahs. That's puzzle, it's usher, it's disgusting. There is no one who walks the face of this earth that knows why anything happens. And there are those amongst us who walk around. No, it's more than that. It's more than that. Yirmiyahu, who for 40 years was the Nabi who prophesied Churban, the moment the Churban came, do you know what happened to Yirmiyahu? He became the Navi of consolation of the Chama. What do you say to a people who are suffering? You tell them, I told you so? Or you say, Hamokim Yenachem Etan Betov Sharem Elitzim to Yerushalayim. I remember coming face to face with this a number of times myself, and I became livid with anger. I remember shiurim that I heard in the middle of the Yom Kippur War. People not even living in Eretz Yisrael who knew exactly why it happened. That's not Jewish. So therefore I had a problem in the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Yehuda says that the word Eicha means tochacha, to admonish. I have difficulty understanding that. And then Rabbi Nechemiah says, no, the word Eicha is to lament, oivei. And how beautiful he says that this is what the Rabbein Hashem told Adam. After Adam Arishon had sinned, do you know how the Rabbein Hashem feels? Oy lecha, Eicha, I feel so bad for you, Adam. I feel so bad for you. But then we have the second machloket of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Eicha was written before the Churban. It was written yet in the days of Jehoiakim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, Eicha is being written by Yirmiyahu in advance. He sees in his mind's eye that the city is going to be empty. People are going to be in Golus. At that point in time, he has a right to admonish. Reb Nechemiah, who says it was written after the Churban, says Nechemiah is the one who therefore turns around and says, you know what Eicha means? You think, God forbid, that Yirmiyahu is walking the streets of Yerushalayim, coloring the few people who may be walking there and saying, no, I told you so, come on, let's go around, take you through a few of my chapters and you'll see, I describe it precisely. God forbid. Job becomes the great Navi of consolation. By the way, that fits in with the first Reb Nechemiah that we learned. Reb Nechemiah is the great consoler. Oh, God, it just occurred to me. The man's name is Nechemiah. Oh, I didn't think of it. Kishmo Kenhu Nachem Ka, the Rebbein Shalom is consoling. You thought of it over here? You're just terrific. What was the first Reb Nechemiah we learned? The first Reb Nechemiah is the one who, he makes the statement that whatever Yirmiyahu said, the antidote had already been said earlier by Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu said, Eicha Yosva, for God, how will she be alone? And Yeshayahu said that we're going to turn around one day and we're going to say, Mi Yolad Liat Ele, who gave me all of these? Where did they all come from? It was worthwhile coming in this morning just to notice that you can sometimes not notice the most beautiful thing of all. I know my mother-in-law, Allah always used to ask me, isn't there something in a name? She always tried to tell me that my son, Yumi, is just like her father, right? Didn't she used to say that? Just like her father. He's named after Zayda Yumiya. Reb Nechemiah, there's something about Reb Nechemiah. Isn't that the first Nechemiah as well? Who was the first Nechemiah? The one who brought Jews back to Eretz Israel? Ezra and Nechemiah. Oh, God. Very good. Haisolamas. Last part of the pasuk says, I don't know how many psukim we're going to learn today, but at least one thing, it will be an introduction for the study of Eicha in years to come. Why am I enjoying learning Eicha so much? It's a terrible thing, except of course that in the Churban, with the Churban was already the siege of Geula. The Gemara says Moshiach was born on Tisha B'Av. Mashiach was born on Tisha B'Av. What does it mean, Mashiach was born on Tisha B'Av? It means that even at the moment of worst destruction, Klal Yisrael always maintains hope. Never despair. Those civilizations that despaired disappeared. And Klal Yisrael, who don't despair because even at the moment of Churban, they already see
they already see the consolation that is to come. That hope is what kept Klal Yisrael alive. All right, Hoysol Amas. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lamas means that they became a people that had to pay taxes and tribute for Tucker. I remind you that this is our last class for the year, and I want to wish everybody that you have a gesunte zimmer, and we will be resuming again 2.5 weeks before Rosh Hashanah, the week of September 14th, Tuesday of that week, which is of course nearly the Ides of Elul. It's Yud Dalet Elul. And as usual, there will be announcements in the Jerusalem Post, so you don't have to worry about it, but keep that date in mind. And we're really ending a week before we normally end. Every year we would be ending already in the 9 days. What next week is? Monday is Rosh Chodesh. But because of a family simcha that we have to prepare for, I have to start resting up, so we're making a wedding of a son in the United States, so we have to, thank you, so we have to rest up a little bit. Okay. To welcome my brother-in-law, fellow sitting back there, that's Mendel Rubinoff. He's my wife's brother. And he came here last week, this past Sunday, 2 days ago, was the first yard site for my mother-in-law, Alea Shalom, and we will dedicate this year to her memory. So Mendel is here. Okay. Megillat Eicha. Let's begin with a few general comments. There are five chapters in Eicha. Chapters 1, 2, 4, and 5 have 22 psukim each. Chapter 3 has 3 times 22 psukim. Again, chapter 1 and 2, and 4, and 5 have 22 psukim each. Chapters 1, 2, and 4, each pasuk begins with a letter of the alphabet in order, nearly. I'll explain the nearly in a moment. Chapter 5 has 22 psukim, but does not follow the order of the alphabet. It's just 22 psukim. I see the looks of confusion on your faces, but fear not, you'll get it all straight. Chapter 3 has 3 times 22 psukim, because in chapter 3 we have the Aleph Beis 3 times. There are 22 letters in the Aleph Beis. The first 3 psukim begin with Aleph. The second 3 psukim begin with Beis, and so on until the end of the Aleph Beis. That means 4, 5, 6, 7 times 22 would be the number of psukim in all of Eicha. I'm not too good at arithmetic. I'm not even going to try and I'll calculate it. You can all do it at home on your computers, and your high-speed computers obviously will give you the answer. I did make a comment when I said that they follow the Aleph Bet. I said, what word did I say? Nearly. Why did I say nearly? Because chapter one follows the Aleph Beis precisely. From Aleph straight through to Tav. In the second chapter, it follows the Aleph Bet except for 2 letters that are out of order. In chapter 2, Pasuk 16, Potsu alayich pihem kol oyevayich, and Pasuk 17, Osa Hashem asher zomam, over there the pay precedes the ayin. And that's what happens in all the other chapters where it follows the alphabet. The pay precedes the ayin. In the alphabet, ayin precedes pay. And the Gemara asks, Lama higdim pay la ayin? Why does the pay come before the ayin? Says the Gemara, Amar Rabba, Amar Rab Yochanan, Rabba said in the name of Rab Yochanan, Bishvil miraglim, because of the spies, she'omru b'fihem, mashalo ro'u b'einehem. They said with their mouths what they had not seen with their eyes. They put their pay before their ayin, or maybe better said, they put their care before their ayin. They said that which they didn't see. But you will tell me that they protested so much that they are giving a report of what they saw? So you know, of course. You see what you want to see. And because you see what you want to see, they saw the wrong thing, and therefore their mouths preceded their eyes. Interesting, the Baal Torah Tamima asks, well, why don't we have the pay before the ayin in the first chapter as well? Then he says one answer that doesn't excite me much. He says, you'll notice the change is more dramatic when in the first chapter it's the Aleph Beis in order. And then in the second chapter, all of a sudden, things are out of order, out of whack. You notice it more. I don't know, it's a little difficult. I think that if we found the Aleph Beis, anybody would have noticed, even in the first chapter, that the pay precedes the ayin. And I had wanted to say that there's another Gemara that says that why does Eicha follow the alphabet? In order to tell us that Jews had neglected the Torah that was written with the 22 letters of the alphabet. Torah, what makes up Torah? The letters of the alphabet. So I have a feeling that maybe the first chapter was in order to tell us that everything follows in order of the alphabet, in order to demonstrate the idea that Jews simply had neglected to fulfill properly Torah that was written with the 22 letters of the alphabet. And then Eicha becomes more specific by pointing out that there was a particular sin, and that sin was the sin of the Meraglim, who put their peh before their ayin. I would say that that's a general introduction to the structure of Sefer Eicha. Who wrote Eicha? Eicha was written by Yirmiyahu Hanavi. And we will see there's going to be a discussion about when he wrote it. When was it written? Was it written before the Churban? Was it written after the Churban? Let's begin. Eicha Yoshua Vadad Ha'ir Rabati Am. How did it happen that Yoshua Vadad alone sits, the city that was once Rabati Am, a city that was once a metropolis of many people? Ha'ir Rabati Am Ha'itaka Almana was like a widow. Rabati Bagoyim, a city that was so important amongst the nations of the world. Sarati Bamedinot, a city that was princely amongst the... When you talked about Yerushalayim, a world took notice. Haitalamas, and the end is that the city is now under the weight of taxes of a foreign power. Yes, I saw the looks on some of your faces, and I think that it's very fascinating. We have to put ourselves in the position of Yirmiyahu,
and not only the position of Yirmiyahu, but what was Yerushalayim for 1900 years. Yes, now somebody sneezes in Yerushalayim and CNN is going to report it throughout the world. A hint of the possibility, you know, a bulldozer or a tractor going through Harnof that may possibly be on its way to the old city becomes news worldwide. It's very important to be able to see the contrast. We have to see what Yirmiyahu, what he's describing, and we're going to see a number, I'm going to use a number of Medrashim in order to explain to you Sefer Eicha. But here we're talking about Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu is talking about a people that, a city that is alone, a city that's lonely, once a great city, once a powerful city, once a city that made a difference to the whole world. And now it is ka'almana, like a widow. Rashi, of course, brings the Gemara that says, v'lo almana mamish, she's not a real widow, elo ki'isha shaholach ba'lo lemedinat hayam v'dato lanzor etzla. It means that even in the first pasuk of Eicha, already the hint of consolation is already there. Yirmiyahu does not refer to the city as an almana, a widow, but ke almana. She's only like an almana. At present, she's alone. Now she's lonely, but it's more like a woman whose husband has gone on a trip, but is ultimately going to return to her. I'm going to read a number of the statements of our rabbis. First of all, there's the famous Maimon Chazal that says that there were three people who used the word Eicha. In Parshat Devarim, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu says, Eicha esol vadi, how can I carry alone Torchachem u'mas'ech masachem v'divchem? Moshe says, how can I carry the burden of this great people? Then Yeshayahu says, Eicha hayta lezona kirya ne'emana. Now, the first Eicha, the Eicha of Moshe is in Parshat Devarim. The Eicha of Yeshayahu is in the Haftorah for Parshat Devarim, which is the first chapter in Sefer Yeshayahu. Eicha hayta lezona kirya ne'emana. How does a city of faith, how has it become a harlot? In other words, there's the Isha image used again, but of course in an extremely negative way. And then the third one who said Eicha was Yirmiyahu. And the Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu saw Klal Yisrael b'shalvatam while they were at peace. Yeshayahu saw Klal Yisrael b'pachazutam when there was a tremendous amount of activity, they were beginning to change from one kind of a people to another kind of people. And it's of course Yirmiyahu who sees them b'churbanam during the course of their destruction. In the Medrash on Sefer Eicha, there are a number of rabbis that are going to take a position that they're going to intensify pasuk by pasuk. One, I will show you in one moment. Reb Yitzchak Pasach. Reb Yitzchak, when he opened his comments on the book of Eicha, he said, Tachat ashalo avadetot Hashem alokecho besimcha uvetuv levav v'avadetot et oyevecho. Because you didn't serve God with joy and with a complete heart, then the end is that you're going to serve your enemies. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu liYisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to the Jewish people, Ilu zachitem, would you have been worthy, then you would have been reading in the Torah, Eicha Esa Levadi. The only Eicha that you would have known is Moshe Rabbeinu saying, how can I carry this troublesome people alone? I'll explain in a moment. V'achshav shelo zechitem, now that you are unworthy, hareyatim kodim Eicha Yoshva Vadad. So what you read is, Eicha, how does she live alone? Let me explain what this means. When Moshe Rabbeinu says, how can I carry the burden of this people? Do you know what he's talking about?
He's talking about a mighty people that grows larger from day to day. I'm not certain how many Jews there were at the end of the 40 years in the desert. There was probably a great deal more than the number that came into the desert. Moshe Rabbeinu has difficulty dealing with so many people. It's a growing nation, growing by leaps and bounds. That's the Eicha of Moshe. Therefore, how can, Moshe Rabbeinu says, how can I carry alone the burden of this entire people? It's a great, big, mighty people growing bigger day by day. And what's Yirmiyahu talking about?
Yirmiyahu is talking about completely the opposite. A city that's alone, a city that is emptied of its people, not in a process of growth at all. On the contrary, we're talking about a process of deterioration, a process of a city once great, powerful, mighty, being emptied of its inhabitants. Then there's fascinating notrikin in Eicha. I'll explain in a moment what that means. Darash Ben Azai said, Lo Golu Yisrael Achekofru B'Yechido Shel Olam. Israel went into exile when they rejected Yechido Shel Olam, the one God of the world. They went into exile because they rejected the mitzvah of Milah that was given at the end of 20 generations. There were 10 generations from Adam until Noah, 10 generations from Noah till Avraham. 20 generations passed until God gave the mitzvah of Milah. Jews rejected the 10 commandments. They neglected the 5 books of Torah. The word Eicha, Aleph stands for one, God alone, a rejection of God. Yud stands for their rejection of the 10 commandments. Chaf represents the 20 generations until Brit Milah was given, which they rejected as well. And the Hay, of course, represents Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Chazal found a tremendous amount within the words of Eicha, and I'll show you more. Another one of the Chachamim whom we are going to follow through the few psukim that we're going to learn this morning. Eicha Yoshua Badot Omar Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Nechemia is very fascinating. Rabbi Nechemia says the following. Afal pi shekilalon Yirmiyahu ba'alav bet. Even though Yirmiyahu cursed them with the letters of the alphabet, afilu hachi, despite that, higdim Yeshayahu v'rif'an lekulan. Yeshayahu already preceded Yirmiyahu with the refuah, the healing, for everything that would be said by Yirmiyahu. Remember, Yeshayahu in time precedes Yirmiyahu. Reb Nechemia is going to show that every negative statement that is made by Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu had already anticipated it, and the refuah was already prepared in advance. First example, Yirmiyahu says, Eicha Yoshva Vatad, how does she live alone? A Yerushalayim without its children. But Yeshayahu already said before, V'amarta bilvavcha, when you're going to take a look at the millions of people coming back to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to say in your heart, Mi yolad li adele? Who gave birth to all of these? Where did they come from? Look at them when they're coming. They're coming by boat, by land, by air. They're coming from all over. And you're going to be so amazed that you're going to say, Mi yolad li adele? What Rav Nechemia means is that Yeshayahu has already described intensely the kibbutz goliot that is going to come ultimately afterwards. Which means that every step of what Yirmiyahu is saying
has already been, in a sense, the refuah is already there. Which brings me to something that I just want to mention in passing, something that was the subject of a major shiur last year. And that was an approach that I took to the idea of a statement that the Gemara tells us, Ein Mugdam U'me'uchar Batorah. The statement, Ein Mugdam U'me'uchar Batorah, usually is understood as meaning that Torah does not follow chronological order. Torah does not follow chronological order, or doesn't necessarily have to follow chronological order. One of the classic examples of Torah not following chronological order is the Sefer of Bamidbar that we are going to be completing this week. Sefer Bamidbar begins in the second month of the second year in the desert. And three parashiyot later, in Parashat Pahalotcha, there is a flashback to the month before. First month in the second year, Jews are told to make a Korban Pesach in Nisan, when Bamidbar opens in Iyar. So the Gemara asks, why doesn't it follow in order? Says the Gemara, Zotavedet, this comes to tell us, Ein Mugdam U'me'uchar Batorah, there is no chronological order to Torah. And I remember I questioned, what is the meaning? What do you mean Torah doesn't follow chronological order? Of course Torah follows chronological order. Where does Torah start? Torah starts with creation. From creation it goes, yes, we talked about the 10 generations from Adam until Noah, the 10 generations from Noah until Avram, Yitzhak, Yavi, Mesha, Adam, Yitzhak, David, Shlomo. I mean, Torah follows straight in chronological order. What do you mean, Ein Mugdam U'me'uchar Batorah? What does the Gemara mean? There is no order to Torah. So I said the following, and that's going to be pointed out as a theme by Reb Nechemia in this entire perek of Eicha. Ein Mugdam U'me'uchar Batorah, I explain, means the following. There are two patterns in history. There are two patterns in history. There's linear or chronologic. It's good, you don't have to understand the word I say yet. I just want you to be, not impressed. You should begin to wonder, what's the man talking about? All history is linear and chronologic, except for Jewish history. Linear history or chronological history means the following. We normally assume in the course of events in history that there's cause and effect. A leads to B. B leads to C. 1, 2, 3. Everything follows in order. Everything has its cause. Everything has its cause. I mean, if you took when we learned history in school, I remember, you had to know, what were the causes of the First World War? Anybody was, of course, going to say the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand, where was it, in Sarajevo? Of course, was making a mistake. In other words, that was the match. But there was for years, all of the struggles going on between Germany and France. But everything follows, it means that everything follows in order. There are causes that bring to effect. That's true of all except for Jewish history. This was, I said, the subject of a shiur a year ago. Jewish history is different. Jewish history does not follow the pattern of cause and effect. Because would Jewish history follow the pattern of cause and effect, we should have disappeared a few thousand years ago. Just as all of the major civilizations, 21 at least in number, that came into being on the face of this earth and then disappeared. But Jewish history is different because Jewish history does not follow Mugdam and Mu'uchar. Mugdam means the former and Mu'uchar is the latter. The history of the world follows the pattern of Mugdam and Mu'uchar, cause and effect.
the former and the latter. The former leads to the latter. The former brings about the latter. One brings to two and to three. And therefore, ultimately, if one leads to two and to three, cause and effect ultimately can bring a civilization to its ultimate collapse. It deteriorates. It begins to disappear until finally it's gone from the face of this earth. But not so Jewish history. Because in Jewish history doesn't follow the pattern of cause and effect. Jewish history is divine history. The Jews, Torah, and God are inextricably intertwined. So just as God and Torah are eternal, we are eternal. And therefore, when the Nevi'im tell us what's going to happen in years to come, it means everything has already, in that sense, been divinely ordained in advance. Jews will go into Gullus, and ultimately Jews are going to return from Gullus. Jews may be in exile for 2,000 years, and they're going to return, and they're going to establish themselves in their own country, something never, ever achieved by any other people on the face of this earth. So why didn't we disappear? Because our history is different. Our history does not follow cause and effect. When Yirmiyahu is talking and about Churban and describing Churban, Churban, destruction and suffering by Klal Yisrael, is always a temporary state. You know what it always is? It's Churban. It's like a Churban. It's like destruction, but it's never destruction mamish. It's Almana, like an Almana, but never Almana mamish. Because Jewish history has already been preordained and predestined by a Rebbeinu Shel Olam who has entered into an eternal relationship with the Jewish people, that even though there be Churban, there is always going to be renewal. And Rabbi Nechemia is going to demonstrate this in every pasuk in this chapter of Eicha. Rabbi Nechemia, in a sense, is saying, It's terrible, but don't get shook up. Because before Yirmiyahu, Yeshayahu had already told us what was going to happen after Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu does not describe an ultimate state of affairs. Yirmiyahu describes the state of affairs that he sees before his very eyes. Doesn't mean that that's going to be the state of the Jewish people. The state of the Jewish people has already been described by Yeshayahu. And